Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Seriously Risky Business. This is the podcast we do here at Risky Biz HQ, which is mostly of relevance to government and policy types. My name, of course, is Patrick Gray, and joining me, as always, is our Seriously Risky Business newsletter author, Tom Uren. G'day, Tom.
G'day, Pat. How are you?
Good. So we've got a few things that we're going to talk about in this week's edition. The first one is a late-breaking story. In our time zone, this is a story that broke last night. Albania has cut all diplomatic relations with Iran, citing a cyber attack as the reason. And this is the first time I can think of such drastic diplomatic measures being taken over some ones and zeros flying around.
Yeah, so the story is that back in mid-July, the Albanian government was attacked. And it turns out that it was Iran, and they don't like the Iranian opposition being based in Albania. Apparently, they moved there quite a long time ago, Iranian opposition party. And that party, the MEK, was going to host a conference. So they attacked the Albanian government. And it turns out that the conference never went ahead because of terrorist threats.
Yeah, so there were terrorist threats, and also this was a wiper attack, wasn't it? Actually targeting Albanian government systems.
Yeah. So that to me seems totally, I guess the word that you'd use in government circles is totally disproportionate to what you're trying to achieve. I mean, probably just calling in a terrorist threat would have kiboshed the conference.
So, and at least the terrorist threat is, you know, you'd think there would be a way for Iran to have done that with some deniability. Whereas when you've got a forensic trial in the case of a bunch of wiper attacks, as evidenced by this decision we saw last night, that's the sort of thing that can cause some drama.
Yeah, it doesn't really make any sense to me at all. Why would you go to all that effort? Why would you leave such a trail of bites to achieve something that you could get done just with something like cheaper, easier, more deniable? So it's very weird. The US government has agreed or confirmed the attribution. They've said that it comes from the government of Iran. And they've actually said that they'll take further action to hold Iran accountable. And what they're really trying to do, I suppose, is make it clear that you can't have countries like Iran or possibly North Korea or I don't know who else just randomly attacking other governments and disrupting their services because you don't like something that they're doing. I mean, Albania's made a statement by cutting diplomatic ties, but I think it's got to be about a bigger response than just what Albania does.
I mean you were just taking a stab at like, well, why would Iran do this? And I mean, the obvious thing that springs to mind for me is that they would be wanting to impose some sort of cost on the Albanian government for providing a safe environment for this opposition party, you know?
To me, the problem with that is that if they'd happened to have come to Australia, we wouldn't think of the Australian government as, you know, air quotes, hosting the opposition. Like, it's a free country. People can come and go. I mean, we might have given them refugee visas or something like that. But that doesn't mean that we're in any way responsible or supporting or anything like that. So,
well, I mean, it's funny because autocracies often don't quite understand that. And indeed, one of China's major gripes with Australia over the last few years is the negative press coverage that the Chinese Communist Party gets in the Australian press. And indeed, they've actually complained about this to the Australian government, to which the Australian government said, well, what do you want us to do about it? I don't think we can just ask the editors of these newspapers to be nice to you. This isn't how it works here.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the sort of long and short of it is I think this is a really significant moment because Iran has stepped over what I think most countries would think of as kind of reasonable offensive cyber operations. They're kind of attacking something peripheral to what their tactical goal was, and they'll be looking for ways to make sure it doesn't happen again. Yeah. So what are those ways? I'm not really sure. It's that kind of dilemma where the countries that you're most worried about are the ones that you have the least leverage over because they're already being sanctioned. They've already had quite a lot of pressure applied to them. So it's hard to find more sticks.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem right to offer them carrots.
No, it doesn't, right? So I totally get that. I remember having those conversations years ago where it's like the pariah states are the ones you got to watch because they don't really have much to lose, right? Which is why we got countries like North Korea going crazy in the SWIFT terminals of central banks all around the world. Well, I guess that's a few years ago now. Now, look, another thing that you covered in this week's newsletter was a tool in the United States that's being used by, apparently being used by some law enforcement agencies. And what this tool does is the tool maker buys a whole bunch of location data from advertising data brokers. They bring it into a central place and then they sell access through a pretty front end to cops, right? So a policeman or woman might say, you know, who was in this area at this time, you know, show me the devices there. And then you might track that device, see if it leads you to an interesting location like that person's home or whatever. There's some concerns over this because it looks like a lot of the usage is happening without oversight, right? So this is kind of like, in my mind, this is the end state of what happens when you don't have any regulation around this stuff. And it is a little bit concerning, right? When you see it all laid out there like this.
Yeah, I've written several times about the sort of privacy disaster that there is in the mobile ad tech and data broker ecosystem, particularly in the States, but I don't think it's unique to the States. And this is a concrete example of someone taking all that data and using it for a purpose that is to track and find people. And it happens in this case that they're selling it to law enforcement authorities. But those law enforcement people are not necessarily getting warrants. So it strikes me as exactly the sort of data that you do want people getting warrants and also having some process after the fact of seeing exactly what was done, oversight basically.
Yeah.
Make sure it was used appropriately. So it takes advertising data, you know, latitude, longitude, timestamp, geolocation, and you can do things like track people or track devices, I should say, to where people sleep and where they go to work and other places of interest that they might visit. So, of course, the abortion debate in the States gives this particular, or the recent changes to abortion laws in the States gives this a particular resonance. But it's also a great example of how you can use that data. And I've written several times in the past about how the Chinese government has gone around collecting large data sets. And a lot of this data would be complementary. So if you can combine this with...
To be clear, what you're saying is they're obtaining this information not on their own citizens, but on the citizens of the United States, right?
Well, they're doing both, I think.
Yeah.
but they're using different means. So in the States, they've hacked Anthem, the medical insurer, probably most famously, the Office of Personnel Management, which holds US clearance data.
But when it comes to the location data, I mean, the thinking is that they're probably buying this stuff through front companies.
I would think, one theory or one possibility is that they've got so much good data they don't need it anymore. They've already identified the individuals that they think are of interest. So, you know, probably at this point it would be keeping up with what's changing. And so maybe it's not worth doing. But I think it's entirely possible that they are buying it and sort of building on the data sets that they already have.
So what's the remedy here, right? Because currently, like, we're in this situation where, well, this is commercially available data. And I've spoken to investigators from law enforcement agencies in the past. And I'm like, you know, outside of America, and I'm like, do you need a warrant to do this sort of thing? And they're like, you know, they're like, honestly, I don't think so. And then there's this spectrum, right? When, okay, say it's not location data. Say someone breaches a crime forum, wraps up all of that information and just sort of puts it out on the internet. You know, is there any issue with looking at that stolen data? And, you know, probably not. You probably aren't required to have any judicial oversight over inspecting that type of data. Is the principle different in the case of commercially available location data? The problem with this stuff is when you start to get into the weeds with it, the remedies start looking a little bit complicated.
Yeah, I think the real problem here is that this data is freely available, and I think it just shouldn't be in the first place. And so for the States, I think a law that restricts what kind of data you can generate and who you can sell it to would be a really good step forward. There's an argument about what may be okay for a company is perhaps not okay for law enforcement because a company can't arrest you and put you in jail. And so the government has coercive powers. Like Facebook may have a lot of information about you, but it can't put you in jail.
Yeah.
And so there's, I think there isn't good argument to have different standards. I think it makes sense that law enforcement at times has, you know, special powers, things it can do that no one else can, because it needs to sort out or solve or prosecute serious crimes. But it shouldn't just be for any crime, and it shouldn't just be because they feel like it. There should be something that limits when and where they can use those kind of powers, and I think that's just totally absent in this place. So it's, I guess I'm arguing for restrictions on how this data is generated and how it's used, and also procedures around how police get access to it and how they might use it. We had a discussion before this recording about mobile phone telephony data. And in this story, the reporters talk about how the use of this data is quite mixed. So some law enforcement departments really loved it and others didn't find it that useful. So I think there's a real mismatch of, you know, sometimes some people who are targets of law enforcement just happen to be using the right devices or apps so that they can be tracked. But a lot of people just won't appear very often in this data. So whereas I think mobile telephony data is more all-encompassing and can be used for much the same purpose and is more tightly regulated.
It is regulated. And the thing is, you know, law enforcement, certainly in Australia, they don't actually require a warrant to get things like tower dumps. I believe they can do that with sort of metadata requests. But there is still at least some oversight over that. The problem with this thing is there's zero, right? You just take the department credit card, I presume, plug it into this thing or, you know, ring up the salespeople and bang, you're on the platform and off you go. So I think that idea that you want some restrictions on the type of data that can be generated and sold, that makes a lot of sense. But also whacking some oversight where you have to fill in a form that someone might review later that says the reason I plugged this number into this tool is XYZ. You know, I was investigating this crime, just some sort of justification might make sense. So yes. But you know, as I say, this starts getting more and more complicated when you start talking about like leaked data and data troves that you might find lying around. Are they open slather? You know, and that's why I say, like, you know, legislation on this or regulation on this is going to require actually a fair bit of thought. And I don't think people fully appreciate that.
Yeah, I don't disagree there. And I think there's a different role for law enforcement intelligence organizations.
Yeah.
So I actually think that it's probably not the role of law enforcement agencies to go around hoovering up leaked data. Because
What if it's a carding forum, right? And
yeah,
the AFP
exactly.
gets a hold of it and they want to see if there's any Australians in there, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think there needs to be a particular purpose that's spelt out beforehand.
Yeah, but without some sort of oversight or process on that, you know.
Oh yeah, exactly.
You can't just say, "Oh, it should be used for this purpose." You need to have some sort of oversight around it.
Yeah. And whereas for intelligence agencies, I'm more of the view that they should be hoovering up a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Well,
because just like Facebook can't put you in prison, you know, our foreign signals intelligence agencies can't do anything to us either, right? So.
Yeah. And particularly the foreign part. I want to be clear that I'm not suggesting that domestic agencies should go around hoovering up all sorts of data about Australians or US citizens or whatever.
No, you're an ex-ASD person, so you just think ASD should be able to hoover up everything, right?
On foreign people.
on foreign people, of course. All right, so let's move on to our third and final topic this week, which is, of course, the Cloudflare being a bunch of Nazi cuddlers and getting called out for it again. Like, this is something that, a lot of people tuned into this campaign. Just to give you the background, everyone, in case you are under a rock and missed it, a live streamer named Careffels was getting doxxed and harassed by the users on a website called Kiwi Farms, which is sort of full to the brim with people who specialize in doxxing and harassing marginalized people. Like, they're real, you know, bottom feeder types, right? Like the worst of the worst. They got a lot of Nazi stuff on the forums as well. There's stuff on the forum that isn't directly involved in like harassing people to death and Nazi stuff, but you know, it is best known for the Nazi stuff and the harassment stuff. So this live streamer started a campaign basically arguing that, you know, Kiwi Farms should be kicked off Cloudflare because Cloudflare's CDN and DDoS protection services was the only way that this site was able to stay online as long as it has. And, you know, the campaign actually wound up getting some traction. And despite Cloudflare publishing a blog post on August 31 saying they would not be revoking service, you know, they did an about face something like 5 days later and did pull the pin on the site. And they said it was because the, you know, the escalation in violence, the planning of violence and violence, violent threats had, you know, gone into hyperdrive. But, you know, I sort of got the sense that perhaps it's because they were starting to lose customers, or at least starting to have that conversation with customers or even investors, right? They certainly felt the heat. But you've done an interesting deep dive on this, you know, really looking at why Cloudflare's policies around this stuff make very little sense.
Yeah, so Cloudflare has what I would call a principles-based argument that there's different layers of internet infrastructure, and some of them are really a lot better for doing content moderation than others. So first of all, if you're running the site, that's probably the exact best place to moderate content. You can take off particular threads or even particular messages. You know, you can be very granular. As you move further away from the content, the hammers that you've got get bigger and bigger, but they take out more of a site. So you can kick a site off the internet, but then you're kicking off the bad and the good stuff.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, there was some non-Nazi content on that site, and if you dropped it, it would go as well.
Yeah, exactly. So Cloudflare uses that argument to say, you know, at the very bottom layer, we should almost never be kicking stuff off the internet because it's just not the right place.
The funny thing is, though, the Cloudflare is kind of alone in that. Like, you don't find other CDNs. Like, you don't find Akamai and Fastly and Amazon hosting Nazi forums, right? Like, it's just, I just find it really interesting that Cloudflare is the only company that has arrived at this position.
Yeah, so the reason I called it principles-based is because it values that principle over everything else. Now, I think that's trying to have an idealistic worldview. We're trying to create policy that pretends that you're in a perfect world and that site moderators and hosting companies actually want to moderate content, and that there's no other, and that, you know, they do a good job, and so therefore Cloudflare's left with nothing to do. But the fact is that there are places that don't moderate content, and they actively try and create communities that are full of hate speech and are just terrible, terrible places.
Well, so, and that inspire terrorist attacks. I mean, don't forget that the Christchurch terrorist who killed all of those people in Christchurch in New Zealand a few years back was all over 8chan, right? And people started pressuring Cloudflare, hey, you know, maybe you want to think about deplatforming 8chan. And there were a few more shootings. There was one in a synagogue, one in a supermarket. Like, there were more mass shootings that were directly linked to 8chan before they eventually pulled the plug. So, you know, this is the part that doesn't make sense to me. And you articulated it just there, which is they say, well, the ideal place to do moderation is actually, like, in this case, at the forum level. But if they're not doing that moderation, I mean, shouldn't you just kick them at that point? Because it's not happening.
I 100% agree.
Like, it just doesn't make sense.
The you know, they've created this sort of, is it ideological? I'll call it principles-based, again, structure that really leaves them doing very, very little. And the justification they use is that we need to have these kind of security services that we provide. So we're talking about the DDoS protection and the content delivery network services. They're all about getting a website that is, in a perfect world, moderated, enabling it to stay up when it gets attacked, and enabling it to serve a lot of people. And so their argument is that we need to provide these security services to everyone, otherwise marginal people will be DDoSed off the internet. But of course, when they're providing it to everyone, they're providing it to the people who actually want to, like, actually physically attack marginalized people.
Well, and
so
don't forget,
not just with DDoS, it's
and Cloudflare,
like,
has
to harass you.
Cloudflare does all the hosting for the DDoS crews as well. Like, they host all of the stresses and stuff, and they've done that for like a decade. You know, they're still hosting absolutely appallingly horrible stuff. Go have a look at Chimp Mania, everyone, if you want to just be disgusted and see that that is actually being served up from Cloudflare CDN. You know, like, they host untold amounts of, like, real sewer level content. And any way you slice or dice the argument, right? So I think around the time of 8chan, they were saying, well, you know, if we kick them off, they'll just find hosting somewhere else. You know, so in that case, why does it matter? You know, why does taking a principled stand, if that were true, why would that matter? Because they'll just go somewhere else. So why does it need to be you, right? And if you take the opposite side of the argument, which is you say, well, if you kick them off Cloudflare, that means their speech isn't being protected. What does it tell you when you're the only company that will actually platform that speech? You know, in my mind, if no one else will support your speech, you know, that's the equivalent of being run out of the town square. And guess what? That's part of the free speech dynamic. That's fine. You know, you with me?
Oh, yeah, I agree. I think that there's, like, you sort of step back and I can see that there's a place for a diversity of voices, right? And yeah. I can kind of accept that there will be providers that maintain and help these sites survive, even though I don't agree with them. Like, you know, there's many, many different types of people in the world, and some of them will do unethical things.
Need access to a top-tier CDN that serves the Fortune 500? Like, it's
exactly.
Crazy.
I just don't think there should be, you know, in effect, the biggest provider of these kind of services doing that for really marginal, extremist, sketchy sites. That kind of doesn't make sense. That's not the way the corporate world usually works.
Yeah.
And it's also just not the right thing to do. Like, why would you enable people to harass other people in the name of the principle of protecting marginalized people? That's just kind of inconsistent.
Yeah. I mean, there was this other crazy thing they said in their blog post, which is when they took money from some horrible group, they donated the money to like the group that the horrible people were targeting and thought that that made it better somehow. Like, so it is this weird ideologically driven thing that just makes absolutely no sense in the real world. And in my view is actually quite harmful. I'm surprised that large companies do business with Cloudflare. Like, that's how like dog shit I think their policies are.
Look, I think the reason is that most people just don't know when they're using a site that is using Cloudflare's services.
Yeah,
it's kind of opaque to the average consumer.
So it doesn't have potential to blow back on the brand that's using Cloudflare.
Yeah, you don't
service,
link yeah. a horrible site that you don't visit with a site that you do visit.
I think ASD actually had been trialing some Cloudflare stuff, and when all the Christchurch stuff happened, they binned them. I'm pretty sure that's what happened back then, but I think that was just rumint. But look, Tom, that's all really interesting stuff, and people can go and read your analysis in the newsletter. They can head to risky.biz/subscribe to get the Substack links. There's your newsletter and, of course, Catalin Kimpanu's 3 times weekly news newsletter as well. Always a pleasure to chat to you, my friend. It's been great, and we'll do it all again next week.
Thanks, Matt.